Is investment something that's always been on your mind, but you don't quite know how to get started on that journey? We are here to set you on the right course. Welcome to My Cashflow Academy's Investor's Corner with your host, Athena Paquette Cornier. We are all about getting out of the rat race through creating positive passive income through real estate investing. Here you'll hear from regular people just like you and the professionals who support us towards greater wealth. Learn before you earn. Move from analysis to action and find the right path to attaining the success that you've always dreamed of for yourself. Now, here's your host, Athena.
Welcome everyone to Investor's Corner. I'm Athena Paquette, and we at Investor's Corner interview investors, but especially real estate investors who have made it out of the rat race and are here to tell their story. Today, I have the great pleasure of sitting down to chat with Rebecca Slivka. Hopefully I said that right. And she is founder and CEO of Pillow and Coffee, which is an awesome name you'll tell us about. And she has a unique business model, which in that she doesn't own the real estate, but she gets the cash flow from the real estate. So that's quite exciting, quite nice. So we would love to hear from you, Rebecca. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, of course.
So why don't we just get started about getting to know a little bit about you, you know, where you're from and what kind of family you grew up in. Did you have genius financial parents and that's why you're so genius today? Kind of tell us a little bit about how you grew up.
Sure. So I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio. My parents, so let's see, my mom worked in a factory, basically, and worked with awnings and things like that. So didn't make so much money. My parents actually divorced, and my mom raised four of us off of, I want to say it was like $27,000 a year.
Wow.
My dad really didn't hold a job very well. He just, jobs weren't for him, I guess. So I grew up in Cleveland and really, I guess, low income family, and eventually went off to school in Connecticut through a scholarship program, which really opened my eyes because I was like, wow, oh, I didn't know people could live this way too. What is this?
What is this? I like that.
So that's kind of a little bit of my background.
Okay, cool. So you went to school. Did you get a bachelor's, master's? How high of an education did you end up getting?
So when I moved to Connecticut, I was actually moved there for high school. And it was like, it's through a program called A Better Chance. It basically takes inner city scholars and puts them into better school districts. I lived in Connecticut, and then on like vacations and stuff like that, I would go home. And really, like, I think there were eight girls in the house that we all lived together, two in each grade level. We had like a house mother that lived there as well. And then we went to school there. And then,
so kind of like you were boarding school type situation.
But we were the only ones boarding, but yes.
Wow.
So that opened my eyes up to a lot of opportunities and possibilities that I really didn't see growing up in Cleveland, just because I didn't exist in Cleveland and those opportunities weren't there. So when high school students came to school with their BMWs, I was like, huh, how can they afford that? Then I was like, interesting. Okay. How do I do that? So after that, I ended up going to school at USC in Southern California. And that's where I got my bachelor's in public policy, planning and development. And then I got my master's in urban planning with an emphasis on social and community development.
Wow. So your Ohio world and your Connecticut world were very, very different, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, just those states are so different. And then, of course, the social economic thing is very different. So, blue collar versus professionals, probably.
Yes.
Wow. And but then that gave you the opportunity to get to USC. Was that on scholarship too? I mean,
partial, yes.
I mean, that's pretty far, right? You went from Ohio to Connecticut to California.
Exactly.
All before you were 20 something, I guess, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's amazing. So why did you choose those degrees, the urban planning kind of thing?
So in urban plan, so I actually went into USC undecided and was trying to kind of figure it out. I thought maybe I was interested in business. I knew that. I didn't know what kind of business. And I ended up getting into urban planning actually because one of my friends, she was already in urban planning and she was like studying or something. And there was a bunch of maps and things like that. And I was like, oh, that looks interesting. Like, what's that? And then she told me about her class. And I was like, that's super interesting. Like learning about how cities are developed and stuff like that. I thought it was a cool thing to understand. So I ended up talking to our guidance counselor about it. And she told me more about the program. And I started taking a couple classes. And then I really, really enjoyed like learning about just different things in urban planning, and is really interested in understanding how cities were built and why they were built a certain way. So it connected architecture, which I really love. It connected urban planning, and it connected just the urban built environment. So that's what attracted to me to that.
Was there any like engineering? Because I think urban planners sometimes are engineers, right? They shift over. So did you take engineering classes too, or?
Not for urban planning.
Like how buildings are structured. Interesting. Because that's interesting. Okay, so you get out of school, and then what do you do?
So actually, before I got out of school, I got into real estate before I got out of school because, so I had a friend, my whole education at USC, I paid for, or I worked and paid for. Like, I never saw an option for my mom to like take out loans or anything like that. That's great. Like, she doesn't have loans. She doesn't even use a credit card. Like, she goes to the bank to get money. Mm-hmm. Like, she just recently got a checking account. So super old school. So I knew that wasn't an option, or I didn't think that was an option for her to take out loans for my education. So I put myself through USC through scholarships and work study and working. So I've always worked I guess since I was like 13, when I got my worker's permit early, I've always worked and I've always learned how to make money. Right. So when I was at USC, one of my friends, he had an apartment all to himself, and I always had roommates because I couldn't afford to live in Southern California and go to school at USC at the same time.
Right.
He had his own 2-bedroom apartment for himself. And he had like one of the rooms was full of his shoes, for example. And I was so confused on how he was able to do that. And I knew I knew one of the places he worked, and I was like, there's no way like that. So I asked him, I was like, how do you live like this? How are you doing that? And he was like, oh, I work for a property management company and they give me my housing for free. And that like just kind of tweaked something for me. And I was like, huh, interesting. And he's not like I wouldn't call him like the sharpest tool or whatnot. Like, he was more of like a very laid back, not very angry type person. So I ended up meeting the property management company. They were really small at the time. And I interviewed with them. And I was like, I want to be your intern. I want to do this. I want to learn it. And that same management company, and they were really small at the time, I ended up building out that management company with them and becoming a partner with them.
Wow. How cool.
So,
over how many years was that you worked with them and built up their portfolio?
So that was, I started that when I was in grad school. So I want to say that was back in maybe 2006 or 2005, but I think 2006. Mm-hmm. And I was working, as I was interning there at the time, I was like seeing all these problems with how they were running their business. I was like, this makes no sense. Why don't we do this? And they were like, oh, okay, try it and let's see. Yeah. And then I would do it and then it would work. And then we would then create a system out of it. So I ended up changing a lot of the infrastructure of how they leased their apartments to students. Because I was a student at the time and I was like, well, this is how I look for student housing. Why aren't you guys doing that? And at that time, they had like maybe 5 buildings or something and less than 20 doors at that time. And as I was working with them and growing it, then we started to have discussions of, oh, let's like pick up more buildings or let's do this. And then at the same time, I was in my grad school years, I ended up interning a different summer for the city of Richmond, which is up in the Bay Area, in urban planning. And when I was doing that, I realized that it just wasn't the right environment for me, because I'm a very much so a go-getter.
You're right.
And it was kind of like everything I would want to do, they would be like, no, you can't do that. And I'd be like, why? Right. That makes no sense. It's with the code, it's with this, it's with this. Like, and they were like, no, in the city, we like to kind of
keep it
simple. We don't need to think outside the box too much.
Yeah.
So
it was like
a huge turnoff for me. And actually the director of economic development sat me down one day, like towards the end of my internship. And he was like, yeah, I mean, he was like, if you want a job here, like you are more than welcome to take it after you graduate. But he was like, I don't know if this is a good fit for you because you need something more than this. I don't think you're going to last here just because I really, really think you're going to want to do more than what is here.
Like you might get frustrated. He was just trying to tell you that.
He was kind of like, you're welcome to work here, but you're probably going to be over it in like a year or two. So
yeah, that's interesting. That's nice of him to point that out, because when you're young and you want to get your first job, you kind of sometimes don't see that, right? You just want to get going and start your career.
Yeah.
That's a good lesson. So you decided not to take the job there. So what did you end up doing?
So I didn't take the job there while I was still in grad school. So that was like one of the summers before my last year of grad school. While I was still in grad school, I was building up that management company. And then we came to a point where I was graduating. They were well aware I was graduating. And I was deciding, okay, do I go work there up in the city in urban planning as what I studied for, or do I start working with them? But for me, I was like, in my head, I was like, if I'm going to stay with the company, I'm going to be a partner and I'm going to be an equal partner. If they didn't offer me that, I was just going to walk away. I wasn't even going to negotiate. I was just going to leave and say, sorry, that's going to be the end then. And
that's pretty tough.
Yeah. And that was just already in my head. And
wow.
Because I knew that I had brought, like, I had made their job much easier, because they're real estate investors, really managing their own portfolio and looking to grow it. I didn't realize at the time how much value I brought to them, though. So they sat me down and they were like, look, we'd love for you to be a partner and we'll offer you a third, because there were three of us. Mm. And then I took it. So that was, and I was like, all in building up at that point, I was like, okay, now we need a team. Because if we're going to grow this, we need a team. I can train them and we can, like, we'll put together the company piece by piece. Because at the time, it was just them two.
They were just winging it.
Yeah, they were
just winging it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that's
infrastructure and you needed some kind of structure so that you could grow something on a team structure, right?
Exactly. Yeah, because if we were building it, it couldn't just be us three doing it. We were going to need to hire a bookkeeper at the very least, then a CPA, and all those pieces that they had been just focused on acquiring property prior.
Okay.
And yeah.
So was that all student housing then? Or I think I read in your bio that you mainly did student housing there.
Yes. So it was only student housing, and we ended up building. So my strength was in marketing and leasing. They have been doing the property management side and they're doing an okay job at it. So I was like, okay, well, let's focus on the marketing and leasing and building that structure and system for them. So I basically built up that whole side of the business and really, really got to understand the student market and understand the very specific student cycles that are in specifically student housing at USC. And that was, I think I built up that company over like a 7-year time period, and I worked with them, and it is only 7 years because I didn't realize how to get out of that partnership. So I would say maybe like 4 or 5 years in, I realized it wasn't a good partnership anymore. Our values, our ethics didn't match anymore. I thought I was building a good student community. And then I realized that my partnership, their ethics and stuff were a little different. And then I was like, oh, I don't want to continue building this. This isn't what I thought it was. But I had never exited out of a partnership before. I didn't even think that was possible because I was so young. So I hadn't had that experience yet, nor did I have any mentors at that time to kind of say, hey, you know, if it's not working, you can get out of it. It doesn't have, you don't, just because you've built that doesn't mean it's your baby forever. Like, right. So I learned that lesson over a 2-year period of being in a bad partnership and finally saying, okay, I'm out of this. Mm-hmm. And when I did that, I gave, like, I was very clear with kind of, if this, this, and this doesn't happen, then I'm going to have to leave because this is a bad thing that's been kind of pulled along for too long. Mm-hmm. And when I left, a couple of the clients found out I left, obviously, and mm-hmm. they were like, oh, but, you know, we need your help. Like, can you still work with us? Like, you mm-hmm. know our portfolio so well. And at mm-hmm. the time, I was like willing to take on like a one client or whatever if they had a good enough size portfolio because I wanted to help. So that's when I started the second management company, but this time on my own with different partners. Like people that I'd worked with before and knew that we would get along and we had kind of the same values. So we built that company up. My other company still exists, the one that I've exited out of. They still mm-hmm. exist. They're still one of the top three largest companies around USC as wow. we built them up to be. And at that time, so I had not gotten involved in real estate as far as like purchasing property. I was very well versed in managing property at that time.
Right.
And understood how to talk to owners and work with owners because we eventually not only acquired new properties, but we also acquired new contracts as well. Mm-hmm. And then as I was growing that my new little management mm-hmm. company, and I had every intention of keeping it small mm-hmm. and not having too big of a team, it caught the eye of another management company. And I would say about a year to a year and a half after that, I ended up merging my company with theirs. Yeah. So,
well, that's really interesting. So are you not involved in that property management anymore?
Not anymore. So the last company I was with, I actually had opportunities to buy into properties with them. So I started buying the real estate that I was managing as well. And then again, built up that whole leasing and marketing side of the business because they didn't, by the time we came on, they had lost their last employee. So they were really, really shaky, needing people because they were doing, and I had already known how to kind of run that business really well. There were new players in the market, mm-hmm. maybe like 3 or 4 years. So they were still learning and trying to understand USC's student housing market. So when we came on, we like basically built that company up. And my intention by that time, because I had been in student housing by at that point, probably like 7-8 years, I had every intention of building it up and then being able to exit because I mm-hmm. knew that that wasn't like I wanted to be able to build a team. I knew I could do that and I could build the company. And then I wanted to go on to other things eventually. So that was always my goal. And so once we started to build our leasing team and marketing team and the property management side as well, I started getting more into the construction of the new buildings we're acquiring. Like we're acquiring between 6 to 8 properties a year at that point, all housing. And then rehabbing them and getting them up, like being kind of rehabbing them specifically with students in mind. So doing like all these student, all the buildings we were purchasing and rehabbing, we were purpose-built remodeling them. So.
Interesting. That's really interesting. So when did you exit that management company?
So I exited that about 2 years ago. So remember I said, I didn't say this yet, but I started the short-term rental business about 3 years ago.
Right.
The whole reason I started the short-term rental business mm-hmm. was because I ran out of cash to continue to buy in Los Angeles. And that was what kind of provoked this whole thing. I was like, okay, I'm at this management company helping with now the acquisition and construction, and mm-hmm. I'm able to participate in purchasing the properties. Mm-hmm. I don't have a huge cash reserve. I've been mm-hmm. putting a little bit, like maybe 25,000 or 10,000 or 50,000, depending on the properties, putting that into the new buildings that we're buying. But then at a point I was like, okay, interesting. I'm not going to be able to kind of keep doing this because I'm going to run out of money. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to fundraise at that time. So that mm-hmm. wasn't an option for me at that time. Mm-hmm. So in my head, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to need to make money somehow outside of this. And it's going to need to be very easy and not time consuming.
Right. So running out of money wasn't really a big deal to you. You were just like, okay, what else can we do to make this happen? Right.
Yeah. Cause I needed to continue to invest. That was in my head. I was like, okay, I need to continue to invest. That's what I was thinking originally.
It's interesting that, so you were in charge of acquisitions and remodeling these units, and you were able to put us, because $25,000 doesn't get you an apartment building in Los Angeles, right? So you were just getting shares to get income off of that. So yes. You were participating in the cash flow as part of your compensation, I guess, right?
Yes.
That's awesome.
I mean, it was much more money involved in the real estate because it is Los Angeles, but that was my portion in. And
right.
So.
That's awesome. Okay. So 3 years ago, you think, wow, I got to get some money and I got to do it ethically. So what can I do? So when did you get the Pillow and Coffee name? I mean, tell us how this all came about.
So how it first started was actually one of our vendors. So we were doing a new construction and we needed to clean it and do like a construction clean. So it's a little bit more detailed. So we're getting contractors out there or vendors out there to bid it. And one of the people that was there, I recognized him and I was like, oh, you have a cleaning company? That's really awesome. Like, how are you doing that or whatever? And then I ended up meeting him at his office because I wanted to really, before we hired some of them, I wanted to see like, okay, can they really handle it? Because if they can, then we have a lot of projects for them. Mm-hmm. And then I saw his office and I was like, whoa, I was very impressed by it because it was in Venice and it was a really, really nice office. And I was like, how is he affording this with a cleaning company? Like, I don't, this number.
How is he affording? That question comes out a lot for you.
Yeah, I'm like, how is this happening? Exactly. And then he's like living in a nice place. And I was like, this isn't adding up for me. So, and then I asked him, I'm a person that asks a lot of questions. If I don't understand something, I will ask a question until I understand it. So he was like, oh, well, I actually run a couple short-term rentals and that's where all of my like living money comes from. And I was like, oh, okay. That makes sense.
Wow.
So once he told me that, like immediately I was like, huh, okay. So I need more money. The short-term rentals aren't taking him a lot of time, clearly because he's running this other company and he's spending his time there. So when I saw some for rent signs next to the building I was living in, next to my apartment, not in the same building, but in a neighboring one. Mm-hmm. And they were actually below market rent, which was kind of crazy. So I was like, okay, low risk. It's not going to be that expensive. And then also it was like very close to me. And I was like, okay, so if this doesn't work out, then I could definitely release this at a higher rate and get out of my contract if I needed to. And I knew how to talk to owners by this point because I had been talking to them. So I was like, they're just people. That's all they are. Like, I know a lot of times we kind of psych ourselves out when we're meeting somebody that is new or whatever. And we're like, oh, like they're so important. I feel this way, especially coming from a lower income class and as a woman, like I sometimes don't feel like I belong. Right. So something I've kind of taught myself was to be like, everybody's just a person. And they go through their own thing.
You keep reminding yourself of that when you
get psyched out, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I approached it that way and they allowed us to do it. So we put it online at that time, we didn't really know how to run the business yet. So we just were like, all right, let's furnish it. Let's put some stuff in there. Let's take some photos and let's get this thing up as quickly as possible. And we did that. And, we ended up having our first guest book within like maybe, I don't know, 30 minutes. And we were like, whoa. Yeah. So,
okay. So if I heard you right, you live in an apartment, you have a place to live and you think, oh, next door, there's a place for rent. I could rent that out, sign the lease, even though I have a place to live already. I'm going to sign that lease too. And they wanted to charge you a certain amount and you just figured I can make more money renting it out week by week.
Yeah.
Instead of the long-term rental. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Like we did a little bit of research. I mean, we honestly didn't dive so deep into the research. We were like, okay, let's look online. Let's see what people are getting and whatnot. And then I was like, okay, I think if we can do this and like, even if we're not perfect at it, we'll still make a lot of money. And we still have that unit today. And it's one of our better performing units.
Isn't that funny?
Incredible.
Yeah, that is incredible. So you started with one, got it rented pretty fast. Oh, so you said you had to furnish it. So how much would you guess you spent on like putting all the stuff in there?
I would say like $3,000. And the reason it's so cheap was the first units that we put up, the yard sale. We got lucky. We went to a yard sale where there was this young woman that she was moving out of LA and she just wanted to sell all of her stuff. And we're like, let's get there early. Cause we looked at the pictures. We're like, oh, it's really cute. Like, this is nice, good quality furniture. Uh-huh. And then we went there early and we're like, we want to buy everything, everything, like your garbage cans, your shower curtains, everything.
She must have had a really weird. She's thinking, what?
She was like, you sure you want like this garbage can? Like, you know, I was like, yes. I want it.
I want it. So
I need it. So we ended up buying all of her stuff. And she was like very happy to get rid of all of it. Cause she was like, I'm done with my yard sale in 1 hour. Great.
Yeah. Cool. Doesn't have to stand there all day and negotiate $1, $2, whatever, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
We were able to get our unit up really fast because of that. Mm-hmm. And we made money, like, we made money obviously through the first month and then we started being in the black. So we started being profitable and basically paying back all of our investment and stuff within 3 or 4 months.
Wow. That's incredible. And so when you lease the place, you're doing a year lease. Is that what you're doing or longer?
No, we did year leases. Year by year? We continue to do year leases. A lot of our growth has actually been with just a few owners. Because whenever they have another vacancy, they love our model so much that they're like, hey, I have this other one. Will this work for you? And it's come to the point where before they'll purchase a building, they'll say, hey, I want you to tell me if this building works for you.
Right. Wow.
So
yeah,
we've even walked buildings or given our advice on how they could remodel it and things like that.
Well, yeah, because I saw your pictures online and you guys have great taste. It looks great. I mean, they're all different styles in a sense, but really, really nicely done. So I would, too, call you and say, hey, am I on the right track here? So do you lease just apartments? Are they condos? What types of properties are you doing your business through?
So we don't do condos at all, mainly because of the HOAs. But we have apartments and houses.
Okay. And is it an even mix or more houses? More?
I would say at this point, there's more apartments than houses.
Okay.
And all of our houses, just so everybody knows, are smaller houses. Because the bigger the house, the more likely you'll have party people. And that's just that's not our audience. So that's not who we want to serve. So that's why.
Yeah. It seems to me there would be more risk in having more people in the house and maybe they'd destroy things, right? I mean, they might wreck things or get the neighbors upset.
I mean, people in the short-term rental business, basically you have to figure out kind of who you want to serve. Because, I mean, people that rent party houses, they do really well. People that rent to like business travelers and smaller families going on vacation, like we do really well in that. Mm-hmm. So it's really, and I don't honestly want to serve people that are going to party in the house and kind of not have any regard for the property or anything like that, or disrespect the neighbors. So I don't want to create that kind of environment. So I didn't, that's why we don't do bigger houses.
Right. Right. That makes sense. So this was 3 years ago that you rented this first property, right? Approximately 3 years ago. Okay.
Yeah. A little bit
ago. And so how many properties are, what size is your portfolio now?
So we're now over 80 units and a lot of that growth was actually in a 12-month time period when we grew 50 units in a 12-month time period.
Oh, my God. Okay, so that begs the question. So who's on your staff? How did you do? That's a lot of like signing leases, seeing property, buying stuff. I mean, all of that, getting it online. So who's part of your team to make this happen?
Okay, so we have customer experience representatives. So they're the ones that do all of the communicating with our guests and communicating with our cleaners and our, and just different people, like anything that you can do online or on the phone, they're doing that. We also have managers. We also have what we call runners, which is like people that, like, let's say a person needs more coffee or something like that. Then we have them bring them more coffee. And ideally, they're not running out of things, but if that happens, they're doing that. We have first response maintenance. And what that means is instead of sending a contractor over right away, which is can be costly, we have a person that will, if somebody's like, oh, the toilet's not working properly or something like that, we'll have them go over first so that it's literally within either minutes or maybe an hour or something like that, where they're addressing the issue, where it's like, at least the guest knows that we're addressing it. And if they can fix it, they'll fix it. And if they can't, then we'll call like a plumber out or something like that. A lot of these things are small maintenance related things. We have a cleaning staff. They're all independent. I should note this, that they're all independent contractors though, like our cleaners. And we work with a designer that designs and furnishes all of our units now, because there's no way we would be going yard sailing every weekend. And that ended pretty quickly, by the way. We need to just buy furniture new. Let's get it in. We also have a linen company that we work with that commercially launders all of our linen, just like a hotel would. Because once you get past a couple of units and you see the amount of laundry that needs to be cleaned, it's amazing. I mean,
so
we
have
obviously
your bookkeeper. How is the money flow thing?
Yeah, we have our bookkeeper. We have our CPA, definitely. Yeah, and I mean, I have a coach and mentor as well. I think that's extremely important as you're growing, especially in an industry that's kind of, I mean, it's been here for a while, but it's kind of showing itself in a new light now. So there's a lot of things that aren't for this industry yet, like a lot of resources and things that aren't here yet. So, I mean, I can't speak more highly of having a coach or a mentor, or somebody that you can bounce ideas off of or talk through things and things like that as well.
And is that someone who's in the industry and understands your industry, or is it someone who's a really good business person who's helping you troubleshoot things even though they're not in the business?
So it's interesting. So my coach, his name is Jay Massey. He's in real estate. He's been in real estate. And I met him through my old business partners, because I was like, okay, well, I need to learn how to fundraise. That was my first step. And then they were like, well, you can use our coach who coaches us, but we don't really know how to use him very well. So why don't you take a session with him? So I talked to him about
fundraising. They had a coach, but they weren't using him.
Yeah. They didn't know. I guess they just didn't know how to use him properly. Cause you know, you normally you would prepare for questions for your coach and things like that. But, so they let me have a session with him, and this was when I was in student housing, and I was like, yeah, I need to learn how to fundraise because I'm going to run out of money. And I know that time is going to come pretty soon because of how quickly we're buying buildings. So then I was learning. And then I didn't really get how to fundraise. I didn't have the network that I thought I had, and just didn't know how to ask the questions properly. So then I ended up, so my coach now, he actually got into short-term rentals when we were, I think we were about 10 or 15 in short-term rentals in. And that's when I left my company. So I was doing it at the same time. And then he asked me some very simple questions that it's kind of funny and comical now, but I had a call with him outside and I was like, hey, like, I'm trying to figure out like this business, right? And he was like, okay, so which one makes you more money, your short-term rentals or your property management and owning those properties? And I was like, to be honest, my short-term rentals. And he was like, really? Okay, interesting. And he was like, which one takes you less time to do? And I was like, definitely my short-term rentals, because I spend all of my time in my company. He's like, dang. And then he was like, and which one is going to give you the lifestyle that you want? Because I wanted to be able to travel and do all these things, live in other places. And I was like, to be honest, because my partners, I don't think they would, even though I've replaced myself, they wouldn't like that I'm not in the office. Because one of them's a workaholic. And it's just like, since they're there, they feel like everybody else.
You have to be physically there. Right.
Exactly. And I didn't agree with that. I was like, I built the business.
I didn't agree with that. I like that.
Exactly. So then his question to me was like, so what's your question? Your hobby basically is giving you, throwing off more cash flow. You're spending less time and it's going to give you the lifestyle you want. So I don't get it. What's your question? And I was like, okay. Now my question is, how do I get out of my partnership?
So that's awesome. So compared to the first time, you didn't have a clue and kind of struggled on how to tell them that the relationship was over. But round two in your second business, you had a coach who helped you to know how to get out, right?
Yeah. Or do it more gracefully. Helped me realize that it's okay to move on and you're going to be able to build something much bigger and you'll be able to purchase a lot more real estate on your own without just having a very small sliver of that. So,
right.
Yeah. And that's kind of, and then after doing that, we met up and then I kind of showed him, I was like, yeah, I make this much off of it and we're making this much money from these. And he was like, wait, a month? And I was like, yeah. And I kind of didn't, we didn't really know what we had at the time.
Because you were just doing it.
Yeah. We were just doing it and we were like growing. And he was like, we need to meet. Let's meet. And then, so we ended up meeting and then he was like, I need to do this. I need, like, this is too good for like his audience at the time, like to not have the opportunity to get into. So he's like, I got to do this. And then once he started doing that, then he's like, I got to teach people this. This is crazy. Like, this
That's
is
so
absolutely.
Funny.
Yeah, he's like, this is absolutely insane. And then, so he stopped building his portfolio, started teaching people this. Now he's like, now, mind you, he's been in real estate, owned over 1,000 doors and everything. He's now stopped all of that. And he's like, full-fledged in short-term rentals.
Wow. That's amazing. It's true that sometimes the student teaches the teacher, right?
So
That's cool.
Yeah, we didn't know what we had until he was like, wait a minute. And then we still kind of didn't know what we had until much, like, he was like, wait, you understand that what you guys are building will allow you to buy real estate in Los Angeles if you wanted to, as often as however big you build your portfolio will kind of dictate how often, like literally you could buy your own buildings with your own money, not needing to fundraise because you don't like doing that anyway, for some reason on your own, like monthly, quarterly, whatever you want. And these are apartment buildings. So
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So the other part of your team, you have a beautiful website and lots of great pictures and all that and easy to navigate. So do you have a person doing that or have you retained doing that yourself since that's your background or?
So we are, so as far as the photos and everything, we hire a professional photographer every time now. Takes awesome pictures and really kind of brings the properties to light to really understand the experience we want to create. And, so our website runs through one of our kind of management platforms in a way. And we're actually looking to upgrade it and improve it even more.
Wow, that's awesome. So people can book online, right?
Yes.
Everything goes through that website, right?
They can book through our website. We also use different marketing channels like Airbnb, VRBO, Booking.com, Hotels.com. We do use other channels as well.
Okay. Wow. Cool. Okay. So do you have any master leases that don't renew? Like, do you have a certain percentage that they just, maybe they want to sell or maybe they just don't want to do it anymore? Do you have a certain percentage that doesn't renew or do they all renew?
All of the owners that we work with, they all renew. I mean, they love us. They really see what we bring to the property. So like, for example, in our properties there, we have eyes on, like, we're a better management company than they are because we always have eyes on the property. Like whenever our cleaners go in, if there's something like damage or anything like that, we fix it right away because that's our business. We can't let things, like if there's a leaking faucet, we fix it within minutes or hours of when we find out about it. Whereas if that happened in a normal rental, the renter may not say anything. And then now you have a leaking faucet for months, years.
For sure. Yeah.
Right. And like, or they don't bring up issues in the property. Like maybe there's mold or something happening from something that they think is maybe their fault or whatever. They may not bring up issues.
Yeah.
So for us, we have our maintenance teams go in there immediately to resolve whatever issues are happening. And we don't have food in our units. So there's unlikely to have pests and things like that. A lot of times we'll even upgrade the unit. Maybe we're painting it, or maybe we're like, we've even done remodels for the owners, given the owners a loan to do it and did it so that, because we know that, okay, in this building, we can get this much rent as long as it's up by this point. And maybe the owners didn't have the contractors at the time. So we've actually gone into units and remodeled them fully. I mean, that's not a normal thing, but we've done that too. But I mean, most of the time we're just going in, maybe putting a little bit of paint on the wall because we want a certain color in there or whatnot, and we're ready to go. So,
And so when you sign a master lease, they're fully aware that you're going to be subleasing it to these people, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that it's going to be short term. Do you guys take daily people or only weekly? What's the term you let people stay?
So on average, our stays are about, I would say about 7 or 8 days on average. We do get people that stay a couple months. And we also get people that stay a night or two nights. We kind of have everything.
So that's pretty, so the night or two nights that gets, that's high management, you know, that's a lot of turnover, right? So,
yeah.
And is it dependent on the area that, that the property's in, which we haven't talked about? Where are all your homes? Like kind of a geographic area. Where do you,
so they're all in the city of LA, and we choose the properties specific to the cool neighborhood, like neighborhoods that we think are cool and trendy and where people want to be. So, so we're all in LA, every single one.
So people visiting LA would choose a sub neighborhood depending on how the feel is or something like that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, cool. Oh, that's cool. So let's see how we're doing on time. My God, the time flies, you know, it's just so fascinating to talk to you. So, okay. So you talked about how you choose the properties, I think, because you're looking for smaller homes, apartment buildings in cool neighborhoods, things like that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so how do you think the regulations around short-term rentals, you know, it's kind of like some people hate them, lots of people love them, but it seems like government entities are trying to get their hands in it or trying to mess with it. So how do you think these regulations or this feel about short-term rentals, how do you see that affecting your business going forward? Because obviously this is going to create the lifestyle you want, so you've got to protect your business model too, right? So how do you feel things are going or where they might go?
So with short-term rentals and basically the legality around it, it's interesting because for us, we can kind of pivot at a point where if we needed to have 1 month or 2 month long stays, it wouldn't be a problem. But it's something that we can't control. This, I think the cities are doing a lot of the regulations because they don't understand it. They're seeing the 0.01% that are having parties and like pulling apart neighborhoods, things like that. But it's, or they think that, oh, everybody that comes here, they're just going to throw a party and it's going to tear apart these things, right? But in reality, like if I were to tell you, if I were to, over 10, we've served over 10,000 guests. And
And
of those people, we probably had 3 bad apples, maybe 4. That's it.
Wow.
And we were able, like every single time when that happened, we were able to get in front of it fast enough so it doesn't become a bigger problem. So I don't think the sharing economy is going anywhere at all. And I think the cities will eventually adapt to that as well. But it's kind of newer for them. So they're kind of trying to balance and understand it better. So they're putting regulations in place. And as they do that, they'll probably change over time as well as they start to understand them better. And we just will have to go with the flow of what the cities decide.
Yeah, because if you're in Los Angeles, you're subject to rent control, but I guess it's the original owner who's subject to rent control, right?
Correct. Yes.
Right. So that's interesting. Yeah. Okay. And let's see. So Prop 10 then you don't think would affect your, them making rent control all over the place again doesn't affect you because it affects the original owner.
Yeah, so it's definitely going to affect the owners. But for us, like, we're coming in, we're going to be, you know, I mean, if when we go to rent those properties, it's not like if they had a lower rent because of it, it's just a lower rent. But it does, it impacts the owners of the properties much more than it impacts our business.
Right, because you're not the original, you're not the owner of the building, you're renting. So you're actually the client, you're actually the client on the side of your.
Yeah.
And they're not controlling, you don't care if they control your rent because you know.
Yeah, and for us,
if the rent's kept down, that's good for you.
Yeah, and for us, we actually have an advantage because we're coming in as a corporation. So that's treated a little bit differently than if we were a person coming in. So like we have our entity structure that we're like, okay, we're coming in like this. So it actually can benefit the owners as well because we'd be willing to pay a market rent instead as well. So,
right. But, yeah, that's an interesting twist, huh?
It's interesting.
So the kind of the last portion is just like, if you were to do things all over again, what would you do differently from how you did it?
If I were to do things all over again in real estate in general, the first things I would do is to learn more of the aspects of it. Because when I went into the student housing, I was in student housing for like 8 years before I purchased my first property with partners. I never learned to leverage. I never learned how to leverage money. I built up so much value for the owners and I didn't understand it. So if I were to do it over again, I would have learned and gotten a mentor earlier and then took action and actually have purchased real estate a lot earlier. That would have made a completely different, that would have led me on a much different path. And then now with these, the real estate market and having these other opportunities like short-term rentals, like you can get into this business with literally $5,000, if that, maybe not even, you know what I mean? Like we got into our first unit with 3,000 and we rolled that and kept rolling that and rolling that and rolling that to now having over 80 units. So yeah, I would say just to learn, get a mentor, surround yourself with people smarter than you and take action.
Yeah. Very cool. So what do you think your biggest disappointment was through all of this?
So I would say my biggest disappointment was not understanding my value and kind of, and I do think that women specifically do this more often than men. I guess they don't understand their value or they cut themselves short or whatnot. So I would say, I wish I would have invested in real estate earlier and not been afraid to do that. Because I saw my business partners doing it, but I never asked the questions at the time of, hey, how are you doing this?
Right.
And can I, and literally asking, hey, can I be involved in the next deal? How can I be involved in the next deal? I know I bring value and I just didn't understand my value till much later. So I would say that my biggest disappointment was not getting involved as early as I could have. So.
And maybe not asking the questions to... Yeah. To be involved.
Just kind of accepting
back to that feeling of like, I don't belong or that's them, but that's not me. That kind of feeling, you know?
Yeah. And really breaking out of that and saying like, no, I deserve this too. I'm the one that actually has stabilized and built up this whole company. I think I am smart enough to purchase real estate. So really understanding that. I feel like if I would have done that earlier, I would have been in a different position much earlier than now. Not that it's late or anything like that, but.
Right. It's never too late, right? So, but it sounds like if you had the mentor or like you said, people smarter than you, they would have helped you to see that maybe and help push you. You know how people who see something in you that you don't see in yourself, they'll push you towards the thing that they see because you don't have it in you yet to do that, right? So.
Yeah.
So getting mentors sooner in life, I guess, is a good idea, right?
Yes.
Very cool. So what would you give as advice to someone who's maybe listening to this and thinking, you know, how do I do that? Or, you know, what advice would you give someone starting in real estate and perhaps maybe that wants to get into this business that you're in?
So I would say learn just enough and then take action. I think taking action and failing quickly, like you're going to fail. That if you're owning a business, you're going to fail. And accepting that and just being able to get up fast enough and continue to move forward. So yeah, my advice is honestly is to take action. Like, it's great to have a lot of education, but if you don't take action, it's useless until you take action.
Yeah. Kind of like those people that keep studying and there's all the books on the shelf, but they don't own anything.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you do kind of wonder. Okay, well, that's great advice. So how would someone get in contact you, or what's the website if they just want to check out your website and how your business works and what's available, because they might be actually traveling to LA?
Yeah, so our website is pillowandcoffee.com, and you can reach me at Rebecca, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, at pillowandcoffee.com.
Awesome. So hopefully we'll have you live for one of our Women in Investing conferences. People have been asking about that. And I think it's just because we women also need to help bring each other up, you know,
yes,
each other up and present a picture. You're an awesome picture of what success looks like. So I think that would be great if we could do that soon.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, people can watch this video again. So do you have any parting thoughts before we go, Rebecca?
No, I would just say, like, for everybody listening out there that's interested in short-term rentals, it is a very low barrier way to start getting into real estate and understanding how real estate works. And the master lease concept works really well. And just when you do start, I would say the most important thing is to understand who you want to serve. So are you wanting to serve small families, or are you wanting to serve business travelers, or just travelers, vacationers, things like that? When you can figure that out, everything else becomes easier, because that way you know how to design your unit. You know how big of a unit you need. You know how to talk to your guests by that point. And to figure that out for us, it was our own avatar. So start with something you know, like yourself, and do that. Like, if we were going to serve families, we know, like, okay, things like strollers and high chairs and things like that would be a nice thing to have in the units, especially if they have small children. So yeah, just knowing who you want to serve is going to put you like light years ahead of people that are just getting into the business and don't know who they want to serve, because then it makes everything else just much harder.
So you're saying put yourself in the shoes of those travelers or those visitors and try and imagine what they would ideally want in their unit that they're going to rent.
Yeah. If you're like, oh, I want to serve a business person, a business traveler, know that the Wi-Fi is extremely important for them. Having a desk space is also extremely important. Things like that, and that's like, for example, when I travel, I'm more of a casual traveler. So I like to be in like cool neighborhoods, which is why all of our units are in cool neighborhoods, because that's who we're serving. So it really will dictate how you're going to build your business and what you put in your business, and it's like you'll know who you're serving, so you'll like the people you serve.
And it seems like if the unit looks like what, say, you would want, you're attracting more than any kind of fancy hashtags or whatever. If it looks like something that person would want, you're kind of attracting that person, right?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing insight. Well, thanks so much, Rebecca. I'm so glad you could join me today, and I'm sure you've inspired a lot of people with your story, but also just your down-to-earth way about you is just awesome.
Cool.
So thanks for sharing time with me, and I'll see you soon, hopefully.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
This has been another episode of My Cashflow Academy's Investor's Corner with your host, Athena Paquette Cornier. We wish you all the success you deserve as you use what you've learned here out in the real world. Check out the blog post for this episode, along with many more helpful resources at mycashflowacademy.com.